Good morning. Good morning, church. Thanks so much for being here, and so glad you're a part of this time and just this gathering for sure. Also, just want to say, for those who may want their children dedicated in the future, we already have that on the calendar, and you can check with Diana when that is, because we want to give you enough time to contact family, because we know, you know, family needs to be here. So you know a little bit about that. Hey, we continue today in our prayer series. We started 2 weeks ago. It's hard to believe we're in our final week of our 21 days of prayer and fasting. And I don't know about for you, but I know for Ellen and for me, it has been wonderful. Just incredible, the time that we've had to, I think, just be connected. And, you know, we see the Lord working in that and doing some things in that. I'll talk a little bit about that later. But today, you and I are going to talk about one of the most powerful men in the world at the time that we read about him in 2 Kings 5. His name is Naaman. And I want you to know, Naaman is a man's man. Listen to what verse 1 says in 2 Kings 5. The king of Aram had great admiration for Naaman, the commander of his army, because through him the Lord had given Aram great victories. Now, Naaman is described in ways that most of us wish we would be. He's so highly respected by the king. He's looked up to by everybody. Here's the truth. When Naaman talked, people listened. And wherever Naaman walked, people watched. He was a holder of this powerful position as the leader of the king's army. And he was a hero. He was a celebrity everywhere he went. And God had used him, empowered him, if you will, to give the king great, great battles of victory. And in fact, his surname was Mighty Warrior. Who wouldn't want to wake up to that? And now on the outside looking in, I mean, honestly, if we look at his life, we're probably thinking, man, I tell you, wouldn't you like to be like Naaman for a day? Wouldn't you like to wake up with that? Wouldn't you like to live where he lives, to experience what he experiences? And all these accolades are magnificent. However, there's something in his life, if you will, that compromises all of the great attributes and all of the great titles. There are just simply four words that we're about to find out as 2 Kings ends verse 1. And we begin to find that there's something that colors the rest of his life. And listen to what it is. It says, and though Naaman was a mighty warrior, listen to these four words, he suffered from leprosy. Imagine that. Leprosy was the dreaded skin disease. The reality of it was at then thought to be incurable. We don't know to what extent he had it. We just know he did. We just know that at this moment in his life, everything else was compromised by it. It was influenced by it. It was in some ways colored by it. And I want to tell you what Naaman's story tells us. One of the great truths that we learn from Naaman is this. I want you to know, no matter what position you have, no matter what titles are at the end of your name, here's the truth. Everybody has problems and struggles. Everybody. And Naaman was no exception. Now, for some, like Naaman, let's be honest, some of our struggles are a little larger than others. The truth of the matter is there are some struggles in our lives that literally influence the rest of our lives. There are some decisions that we have made, and those decisions influence our lives for years and years to come. All of us can attest to that. And that was Naaman. And for some of us in this place, honestly, it's the truth. Rest assured, those four words that we read, those four words that we read in some way influenced and colored Naaman's life every day, every situation, every person he met. Did you hear that Naaman has this? I mean, think about it. And for some of us, our issues have done the same. I mean, there are moments, let's be honest, if we're truthful, there are moments sometimes when our struggles seem to overwhelm our capacity to handle those struggles. You know, honestly, I remember situations in our lives in ministry. I remember seasons. We've shared with you. We'll talk a little bit more. But, you know, when our oldest son was born with spinal bifida, I want you to know it tested our capacity. We were so overwhelmed. We were so young, so green. We didn't even know enough to be scared. We just knew we were overwhelmed. There have been seasons of ministry, man, where, to be honest with you, the pain has been so intense, so difficult, that I wondered, Lord, what in the world are we doing here? I mean, all of us have our moments. All of us have our seasons. And what we want to learn today is, What we want to say today is, how can we delve into this passage today? It goes from verse 1 to verse 19. And how can we learn and gain knowledge, gain insights, so that prayer and faith can be a tangible part of our lives as even as we work through our problems? And the first thing we learn is this. Please know, sometimes God's provision comes in different and unique ways. Listen to verses 2 and 3. At this time, the Aramean raiders had invaded the land of Israel. Now, note, I want you to know something. This happened on a common occurrence. Israel was at a weak time, man. Raiders made their way into this country all of the time because they had become weak, because they were following someone other than the Lord. Notice, and among their captives was a young girl who had been given to Naaman's wife as a maid. And one day, this young Jewish girl said to her mistress, "I wish my master would go see the prophet in Samaria. He would heal him of his leprosy." Now, I want you to know something. The most amazing thing about this simple passage is that God's provision comes from someone who has no position, no power, and no voice. The Arameans, they were taking people left and right from Israel. And rest assured, this girl had no voice where she was. In fact, she's taking her life into her hands by even suggesting something to Naaman's wife like this. She had no right to speak on any matter. She had no reason to open her mouth. She had no voice on any subject. She was property and nothing more. And yet, her courage... her courage to speak about her faith is amazing in and of itself. It's amazing to me that she could not help but speak about her faith. I mean, somehow, some way, she had heard about the great prophet Elijah, and she knew how God had the power to work through him. She had heard about the miracles that he had done, the insights that God had given him, and she believed and knew about his capacity to bring healing in some of the most difficult situations. And here's the crazy thing. In God's providence, he takes her simple yet very sincere words, and they matriculate themselves down to Naaman. And in the understanding of these words, Naaman finds some hope in a hopeless situation. And so he's bold enough to take this to the king, and he speaks to him, he responds to this hope. And what he doesn't know is, Naaman unknowingly, when he takes this response, he begins to put into action God's plan to reach one of the most powerful men on the earth. And God begins to work. You see, I want you to know something. Sometimes God's provision doesn't come in the ways we think. Sometimes God works in unique and unexpected ways, through unexpected people, through unexpected channels. Sometimes it's just not the norm. I mean, crazy. I think about this. I'm always awed by it. The spoken faith of a young captive girl would ultimately lead to the healing of a mighty warrior. God used the powerless to bring healing to the powerful. God used someone with no voice to bring words of hope to one who was hopeless. Without responding to these words, I want you to hear me say this. You and I can't always program faith and prayer into a systematic outcome. It is not an A plus B plus C situation. God is just always larger than the A's and the B's and the C's. You know what? There was a man in the 1800s that lived. He's one of my heroes of the faith. His name was George Mueller. And George Mueller was an evangelist traveling across England. And he noticed the plight of the orphans. And at this time in the history of the country, there was a greater need than had ever been before. It wasn't hundreds of kids, it was thousands and thousands of kids. And Mueller and his wife saw this. And God moves their hearts so much that they began to open their home to these orphans and began to take them in right off the street and began to pour their lives into them. And here's the crazy thing. God blessed this ministry in ways over the next decades that thousands upon thousands of children made their way through the Mueller's home. And this home grew into this orphanage that literally still some of that stands today. But it was Mueller who did this. And here's the most amazing thing about Mueller. Mueller never asked for one dime outside of himself to pay for this ministry. He believed so strongly that God had called him to this, and that if God called him to this, then God would provide for him. And he believed so totally in this principle that God would work in unexpected ways and unexpected measures. I just want to give you one reading of how this took place. The children are dressed and ready for school, but there's no food for them to eat, the house mother of the orphanage informed George. Mueller asked her to take the 300 children into the dining room and have them sit at tables. He then thanked the Lord for the food they would eat, and then he sat down and waited. George believed that God would provide food for these children, as he always did. Within minutes, crazy, a baker knocked on the door. "Mr. Mueller," he said, "last night I could not sleep. Somehow I knew you would need bread this morning. I got up and baked 3 batches just for you and the children. I will bring it in." Soon there was another knock at the door. It was the milkman. His cart had broken down in front of the orphanage. The milk would spoil by the time one wheel could be fixed. He asked George if he could use some free milk, and George just smiled as he brought in 10 large cans of milk. It was just enough to feed 300 thirsty children. You see, what I want, Catalyst, is for us not to miss the fact that sometimes God is bigger than our situation, but more times, sometimes God works in unique and unexpected ways. And what you and I have to do is be aware of the outcomes, kind of the workings of faith and prayer, and not always be looking for the neatly wrapped presents that sometimes we wish everything were wrapped up and given to us in. And how many times do we get frustrated when it's not? And what we've got to understand is God's bigger than the A's and the B's and the C's. One of Mueller's favorite verses, Matthew 7, "Keep on asking and you will receive what you ask for. Keep on seeking and you will find. Keep on knocking and the door will be open to you. For everyone who asks receives, everyone who seeks finds, and everyone who knocks, the door will be open." The point is for George and for you is this: you just don't know how God's going to open the door, because He doesn't work in that way all the time. Secondly, this passage of Scripture teaches us about to understand who ultimately holds the power. Now I'm going to take us through some verses here, and what we find here is that there are different examples of power. And we kind of go through a process of this bringing us to a place of understanding where power is really found. We begin with verses 4 and 6. "And so Naaman told the king what the young girl from Israel had said. 'Go visit the prophet,' the king said to him. 'I will send a letter of introduction for you to take to the king of Israel.' So Naaman started out carrying gifts, 750 pounds of silver, 150 pounds of gold, and 10 sets of clothing." I want you to know Elijah was going to be the best dressed prophet there. "And the letter to the king of Israel said, 'With this letter I present my servant Naaman. I want you to heal him of leprosy.'" 2 measures we have here. One is the king of Aram. He was in power, but he didn't hold the power. You see, he wrote a letter thinking that that would influence the outcome of the healing process. He wrote a letter with his name signed to it because he was used to his name being enough. But this time, my friends, that wasn't the case. And then we have Naaman. Naaman knew people in power, but Naaman couldn't buy the power. He packed up gifts in order to barter for his healing. Naaman was a power guy. Please rest assured. He lived his life and built his reputation around power. I mean, battles were won and lost by who held the most power. But this time, Naaman's power was not going to be enough to determine the outcome, no matter how many chariots he arrived with. In verse 7, "And when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes, and in dismay he said, 'This man sends me a leper to heal? Am I God that I can give life and take it away? I can see that he's just trying to pick a fight with me.'" Now here's the king of Israel. He's in a place of power, but he was powerless. And you want to know why? Because he didn't know the real source of power, and yet his country was founded on it. He thought it was all about him. And he quickly realized that he had nothing to offer the situation at all. I mean, the best thing he could do was to tear his clothes and be dismayed. You see, this situation was based on the power of something that superseded him. And then we find verse 8. When Elijah, the man of God, heard the king of Israel had torn his clothes in dismay, he sent this message to him. Why are you so upset? Send Naaman to me. And Naaman will learn that there is a true prophet of God, Yahweh, here in Israel. You see, here's the crazy thing. Elijah was not in a position of power, but he held all the power because God held him. Elijah understood his role. He was empowered simply to be a conduit that God would work through. He realized that his role was not to draw Naaman to himself, but to draw Naaman to God. And that's so important for us for several reasons. First, I want you to know something. When you and I are working through our issues, and we all have issues, we all have struggles, we all have seasons that we are perplexed, that we're struggling, that we're stressed. And I want you to know something, though. Ultimately, that life change, that life transformation that we're looking for, that answer that we're seeking, it is always dependent upon God and God alone. The Apostle Paul tells us that was his life for a while when he had what he called a thorn in the flesh. And he said he prayed to the Lord three different times, 2 Corinthians 12. He prayed to the Lord three times to take it away. He begged the Lord to take it away. Any of you ever begged the Lord? And I begged him. I remember a certain situation. Ellen and I begged him for 9 years. 9 years. I'd wake up sometimes 2 or 3 in the morning. I'd just go down and spend the rest of the night in prayer begging the Lord. Notice what he says. And each time, this is what God said to him. My grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So Paul says, so now I'm glad to boast about my weaknesses. And notice what he says. So that the power of Christ can work through me. And that's what it comes down to. This total dependence on the power of Christ. Second, we're fortunate enough to help someone else. When you and I are fortunate enough that God puts us in a situation and we have this very humble place of being able maybe to walk with other people through, what we have to remember is our job is not to be the Savior, but to point people to the Savior. 2 Corinthians 4 says, you see, we don't go around preaching about ourselves. We preach that Jesus Christ is Lord, and we just understand that we ourselves are servants for Jesus. You see, Elijah understood that he was a conduit, and so must we, Catalyst. As we, hopefully, as we are discipled and we grow in our faith and we understand our faith more, that God equips us and enables us to go and share with our friends and our families, we understand that we are simply vessels of Christ. And third, what we find is that whether we know it or not, our pride can sometimes be the biggest obstacle to our wholeness. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and waited outside the door of Elijah's house. Naaman came in style and he came to impress, didn't he? Sits out on his horse and chariot out in front of the door. Doesn't get off and come down to the porch. He just sits and he waits. But Elijah sent a messenger out to him with this message. Go and wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan River. Then your skin will be restored and you will be healed of your leprosy. But Naaman became angry and he stalked away. I thought he would certainly come out to meet me, he said. I expected him to wave his hand over the leprosy and call on the name of the Lord his God and heal me. Aren't the rivers of Damascus better than any rivers in Israel? Why shouldn't I wash in them and be healed? So Naaman turned away and went away in a rage. See, Naaman's not used to this. Naaman's the guy that the king of Aram sends a letter for. Elijah sends him a messenger. and a brief message. He expected some kind of exotic ritual, you know. Let's make this worth my while for coming this far. And Elijah just simply says, go wash yourself 7 times in a small, dirty river, and you'll be healed. Have a nice day. You see, Elijah understood he served a greater king than did the general. And instead of doing what the prophet asked him, Naaman storms off like a spoiled child. You see, his pride wouldn't allow him to do the common. Do you think just for a moment that maybe Elijah knew that Naaman's greatest need was not the condition of his skin, but the difficulty to overcome his pride and his arrogance? You know, to be honest with you, I see it too much. Where sometimes God has to confront our pride in order to confront the real issues and struggles we wrestle with. I see couples go through difficulties and they're more concerned with being right than they are about being healthy. I want to prove my point. I want you to know who's right here. And the truth of the matter, they would rather be dysfunctional than swallow their pride and do the things that are going to make their marriage work. But I'm going to tell you, luckily for Naaman, he had some truth tellers in his camp. And the text tells us that his officers tried to reason with him. Now, I want you to understand something, because these are men who have earned Naaman's trust. Man, they've been through the battles. They have the scars to prove it. And they had earned the right to speak to him, and they had earned the right from him to listen to them. Listen to their words. But his officers tried to reason with Naaman and said, sir, if the prophet had told you to do something very difficult, wouldn't you have done it? So you should certainly obey him when he says simply go and wash and be cured. I want you to know, all of us need friends like this. All of us need truth tellers in our lives. All of us need folks who will say not what we think we want to hear, but tell us the truth in love. One of those people in my life, I told you, is Jeff, and Jeff's here with us. And Jeff and I have been in an accountability group for over 10 years now. And you know what? I bless them to push back on me. I mean, all of us need those truth tellers. All of us need somebody who will speak to us and give us reason. I love what he says, and they tried to reason with him. Sometimes we just need people who will reason with us, who will say, Roland, I'm not so sure you're right about this. Why don't we look at this from a different angle? But so many times we don't want those kind of people because we want to hear what we want to hear. And I want you to know something. Naaman would have missed a miracle if not for these people. You see, sometimes, friends, sometimes arrogance and pride can be our biggest obstacles to wholeness. Isaiah 2:17 says, human pride will be humbled and human arrogance will be brought down. Proverbs 11 says, pride leads to disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. Matthew 23, Jesus says, but those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves, what does he say? They will be exalted. In essence, Naaman's friends, his officers are telling him, get over yourself. Don't be too proud to do the humble things God asks you to do, because I want you to know, it's crazy, but they understood that obedience is the means God uses to accomplish His will. Can I say it again? Obedience is the means God uses to accomplish His will. Leviticus 18:5 says, if you obey my decrees and my regulations, you will find life through them. Jesus says in Matthew 7, but anyone who hears my teachings and doesn't obey it is foolish, like a person who builds their house on sand. You see, living our lives in faith is built around living our lives in obedience. And it's a lesson we all have to learn. Finally, Naaman makes his way to obedience, verse 14. And Naaman went down to the Jordan River and dipped himself 7 times as the man of God had instructed him. And his skin became as healthy as the skin of a young child, and he was healed. You see, my friends, Naaman's greatest healing was not his skin that day, but it was his heart. Listen to the verse. Then Naaman and his entire party went back to find the man of God. I love this. And they stood before him, and Naaman said to him, "Now I know there is no God in all the world except for the God of Israel." You see, no matter what struggle you and I are going through, no matter whatever difficulties we're processing through, I want you and I to understand that God's ultimate concern is the condition of our heart, not the condition of our skin. He wants to know whether or not we know Him, that we trust Him, that we love Him, and that we find life in Him. The Apostle Peter informs us that that is the reason Christ came. Listen to what he says in 1 Peter 3:18. "For Christ also suffered once for sins," that's the cross, "the righteous for the unrighteous," and then notice the phrase that he closes with, "to bring you and me to God." I mean, notice the steps God went through to orchestrate Naaman's heart coming to Him. He gave a young captive girl the strength to speak about her faith. He moved the king of Aram to send a letter of permission. He moved Naaman to make a journey of faith even when he didn't have faith. He used Elijah to humble a man whose arrogance was his greatest weakness. He used Naaman's own officers to speak truth to him regarding his pride. And God does ultimately a miraculous healing in a dirty river. And He does all that. He does all that to bring Naaman's heart to Him. 1 Corinthians 1 says, "God chose things the world considers foolish in order to shame those who think they are wise. And He chose things that are powerless to shame those who think they are powerful." You see, God was at work in Naaman's life even before he knew it. And I promise you, He's at work in all our lives today. You're not here by chance. You're not here by just simply circumstance. You're here, believe me, folks, because God has a love and a plan for you that you can't even imagine. And here's the million-dollar question today. What about us today? Will we swallow our pride? Will we move even beyond our anger and our bitterness? So many times, it's not just about our pride, it's about our anger and our bitterness that holds us and keeps us and honestly weights us down. Or will we simply submit ourselves to Jesus, believing that His love and care for us is greater than we ever imagined? You know what? I want to give you moments to respond to that today. We set up just two tables, and there are prayer boxes on top of those, and there are just little 3x5 cards. And so today, as we close the service, I'm going to ask you, if there are concerns on your heart today that you would just like to come forward and step and sign those and drop those in the prayer box, that I promise you that the elders and the staff will pray. You don't have to sign your name. And do me a favor, give the Cliff Notes, because there are other folks who are going to be waiting behind you. And I promise you, God knows before you ask, right? But I want you to be mindful of that. And then we're going to leave this front row open. And if you would like to do that and perhaps just kneel down today, just to simply pray, just to make your way here, and as we humble ourselves before the Lord, I'm going to share one thing with you. We get up this morning, which is always our mode of operation on Sunday morning at 5:30, have our quiet time, and we get a text from our son Tyler. And as you know, Ty was born with spinal bifida, and a few years ago he had a surgery for a tethered spinal cord, which is serious stuff. And to be honest with you, we didn't know if he'd walk after this. And man, I'm telling you, I die a little bit in every one of those surgeries. I do. And he had gone numb because his spinal cord had been tethered so much it was squeezing the nerves to death. And he had lost feeling in his left leg, literally from the knee down to his foot. So, I mean, you can imagine for a golf pro that balance is pretty important. I mean, literally, he couldn't spend 5 seconds walking without having to stabilize himself. People would come up to him and say, "Man, I notice you're limping now. Tell me what's going on." Yes, we've been praying for years. And yesterday he texted to say, "What's that ball called?" "Bells, what?" "Say it again." "Oh, Bosu ball." Now, we all know what that is. It's the one that sits on a platform. And he's never been able since that surgery to stand on his left foot. And yesterday, for the first time, he stood 18 seconds balancing on it. And you think, "Roland, I'm going to tell you what, God's at work." We've been praying for God to renew those nerves, to reinstill those. And he said, "I want to thank the Lord today." And see, that makes me happier than anything. Here's a wonderful verse. And Jesus said, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry some heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I'm humble and I'm gentle at heart, and there you will find rest for your souls." Any of you need some rest today? Any of you need some grace today? Any of you need some strength today? Any of you need some mercy today? Then this place is open. And we do it in the name of Jesus.